Hey everyone, welcome to the Talking Split podcast. We are back for episode 30. I am Rob Coulter, the Coach Development Officer at Basketball Victoria. With me I have Mike Zeppel, Justin Schuller, High Performance Coaches for Country and Metro. Welcome guys.
Roberto.
We are at episode 30. We do appreciate all the ratings and reviews that you guys have been leaving for us as well. They are fantastic. You can get the podcast on iTunes, Spotify, Basketball Victoria website, Audio Boom, all those sorts of things.
Still waiting for my Sonos speaker up.
Yep, still nothing, unfortunately. We are a little bit light in the bag dropping area, but I'm sure there will be a sponsor come fairly soon, especially given the podcast is about to take a massive upswing in listenership and quality over the next couple of weeks. The news dropped yesterday in Basketball Victoria World that we are about to lose a member of Talking Split.
We projected this, Robbie, with Dr. Grant last week. We kind of saw, we didn't see something on the horizon, but we were a little bit skeptical that one of us three could commit to the whole season. And 72 hours later, it all came to fruition and we are losing a valued member of the tripod, Robbie.
Oh, the podcast. Where
you're not. It's not the tripod. It's not you that's going, is it, Robbie?
It's certainly not me. I'm assuming you haven't been offered something somewhere else.
No. I'm one pod for me is enough per week, Robbie.
So it would be fair to say, through process of elimination, Justin, you are gone.
Yes, I got sick of carrying you two. So, Nate accepted the assistant spot at Melbourne United. Very excited for that opportunity, but you guys will be missed, and definitely going to miss doing this on a weekly basis. Hopefully you can be a guest appearer down the track.
Well done, mate.
We will be missed. Did you hear that, Mike? He said we will be missed.
Yeah, I'll be missed, the sore back I've got carrying you two every week, but you know.
Robbie, congratulations, mate, first off. Very happy for you, and great move for your career. Robbie, I thought we might have got a shout-out there's like a four-page press release on Justin leaving Basketball Victoria. And in here, Robbie, what I'll miss most are the people I've worked with here in my time, the BV staff, country coaches, athletes, blah, blah, blah. Now onto a new challenge. I'm really excited for my new opportunity, blah, blah, blah. It's a great program, great, blah, blah. Grant, blah, blah. The pod gets no mention, Robbie.
Nothing at all. I find that hard to believe because really, when this first started, what was Justin? He was
a South Australian basketball coach.
Not much else.
That was it.
Like, nothing else. Now, all of a sudden, the podcast comes along and he's been elevated to assistant coach at an NBL championship winning club.
Yeah. Well,
that's a fairly huge appointment.
Like, I was there last year.
Well, yes, you were, but you've been upgraded. So,
true.
A couple of things have probably happened here. One, you've been doing a little bit of a sneaky behind our back applying for jobs this entire time. Or, two, when the reference check came through, Mike and I have lied through our teeth and said you would be a fantastic appointment for Melbourne United.
So I'm not sure there was an application. I'm not sure there was a reference check, so that's clearly why I was able to survive.
Well, look, we are happy for you, but if you do end up on another rival podcast within the next 3 months, we will be a little bit upset.
Yeah, right. There are retainers involved. We will try and get you involved a little bit more. From a different perspective, you might be able to call in occasionally.
And, that would be nice.
So did throw it out on Twitter last night that we are currently accepting applications to replace Justin.
Yeah, phone blew up on that part, didn't it? Very, very good response.
What can we say? We wanted to be hung with on a Thursday afternoon. Like, it's just how it works.
It is good, mate, but well done. It is a good thing for your career, mate.
No, definitely, like, in all seriousness, at 12 years in high performance, so probably a good time to move on and...
You're getting out of high performance? Is that what you're saying?
Well, no, going into the pro level, but like as a development tier, you know, like it's been a long, long path on that front, but feel the country programs probably at a point I could have taken it and excited for someone else to come in and take it to a new level. And yeah, for me to extend myself as a coach and immerse myself in the pro tier. So yeah, exciting times ahead.
Excellent. So that's a fantastic segue into the next part of our show. So we are talking job applications and interviews. So we will be obviously accepting applications to replace Justin fairly soon and job interviews. And the phones have blown up here with people thinking they can do a better job than you, Justin.
Fair enough. They can try.
I'm not saying they can or can't. I'm just saying they can try. But we are getting to the point where squad applications... VJBL applications, state team applications are all open at the moment. Like you open up anyone's website, Facebook page and things like that, everyone's calling for coaches at the same time. So we are going to talk a little bit today about interviews, applications, what should be on there, what shouldn't be on there, what do you need to know as a coach, what are the sorts of questions you'll potentially be asked. Like, this could go on forever.
And the biggest thing is it's totally different to a job interview. Like, you know, I think job interviews, if you've gone through them, definitely can help you with a coaching interview process, but the dynamics of it are very different, and the things you need to be able to sell and give example of, that's pretty much the key.
Absolutely. So when we start talking about applications, obviously your own career path matters in this. Like, you can't go from, say, hey, I'm the under 12 fours coach, I want the 18 ones. That's a big jump. So there is a little bit of, you need to have some planning in place. And I know we've spoken about planning a little bit on the podcast before, about you need to have your own career path mapped out and when you need to move on and what you need to be looking at as well. So what are some of the things that coaches need to be aware of before applying for a team?
I think be realistic with yourself. Yeah, first,
know your level.
First and foremost, yeah, know your level. And then what are you looking to get out of it as well? So where do you see your value at your given time, and what are you looking out of the experience and what you're going to put into whatever position you are applying for? I think that's really important in regards to, you know, and then we're talking about different, you know, varying types of roles here. So we're talking about state team applications that have just opened, we're talking about junior clubs that have just opened, youth leagues and Siebels and Big V applications will open up for various clubs in the future. So, you know, seeing how these opportunities can help your coaching is where I would look at first.
I think part of knowing your level as well is knowing your level to get to your end game. So while your level might be, yep, I've never coached at a state level, but I think I'm ready and I'm going to start at a 16s, even though ultimately I want to coach the 20s, but I'm going to start at a 16s, gain my experience there, and I've never been in a national championship, so I'm actually going to apply for an assistant spot because I need to gain that experience before I set myself up for success. And again, we always speak about appointments as we want to set coaches up for success. You've got to set yourself up for that as well. So that's what we mean by know your level. Know where you feel your skill set is at that point in time, where you can add the most value and ultimately have the most success.
And I think that's a really valuable part, is that a lot of people will want to rush through the pathway as well and say, hey, I want to get to under 20s and I want to get there now, so I'm going to apply for under 20s. And it's like, well, that actually may not be the best thing for you. You might have some gaps in your skill base where I need maybe 2 or 3 years under 2 or 3 different coaches to build some of those gaps. I need to go and spend some time learning how to scout differently, learning how to cut tape, learning how to work players out individually. You may not have that yet. And there's nothing wrong with that. Like, no one's going to sit there and criticise you for being a bad coach.
You can't just gain it without doing it. Exactly. You need years into it.
So it might be a case of not getting that job straight away, but saying, hey, if I'm not good enough to get an under 20 state team position, can I go and watch and help out? And I'll just sit on the clock, or I'll rebound, or whatever the case may be. Just be around the program a little bit and have a little bit of an understanding of what it actually is before you jump into it.
Yep, absolutely. And I think an important thing to realise and understand is that applying for a state team job or coaching on a state team bench is not the be-all and end-all for your improvement. Like, absolutely, being in that environment helps with your development. Bless you, mate.
Thank you.
But applying for a state team job is not necessarily the answer to becoming a better coach. So that's something else to keep in mind.
It is. I mean, you're put in a position where your expectation is to try and develop green and gold athletes.
Yeah.
With state teams, because that is the end goal. It's, we've got a great culture in Victoria of, we tend to be in the medal rounds a lot.
Yep.
But that's not actually the end goal for state teams. The state team really is, we need to produce green and gold athletes.
Yeah. And I think any job you go for in coaching, you know, let's talk club level, you want to kind of have a narrow focus about where you feel you best fit. So use the state example. Well, don't apply for 20s, 18s and 16s. Be passionate about one of those programs and go for that. Club level, as you said earlier, like, you may be really motivated about working with athletes at the entry level. So under 12s, you know, like, that's what I'm passionate about. That's where I want to go. I know I can develop athletes. And maybe you feel you need to... you've got game coaching as your point of difference. Well, 18 VC level, that's where I'm going to target. Not try and hit every application out there and hope for the best. Like, have a narrow focus. I think, you know, that's something that I know we look at is, well, who's the most passionate about which one they're going for?
The counter to that, Robbie, would be, are you boxing yourself into one demographic of athlete at the club or association that you are? So, like, are you only an under 16 boys coach, or can you quite as easily develop the talents of an under 12 cohort of girls? So they're just some of the questions that I pose to coaches here in Melbourne, is like, how do you view yourself as a coach? Are you a basketball coach, or are you, does everyone just know you as the under 16 girls coach at whatever association? So can you keep that in mind?
Yep, and as the great Ron Swanson would say, don't half-ass two things, whole-ass one thing. And you can go from there, just tie yourself into that. Thank big you, Ron Swanson.
Parks, you got some good quotes there as well, don't you, Zep?
I do have a quote or two, mate. I will bring them up a little bit later.
Okay.
Excellent, we'll come back to that. So you two have sat on numerous panels for coaching applications, state level, club level, seniors, juniors, and all those sorts of things as well. So what are some of the things you would be looking for in your candidates as you interview them for positions?
For me, the first one is what you're looking like as you turn up. Like, I've always wondered what to dress like for a coaching interview. And early on, I'd wear a polo and, you know, stay casual with it. But then over time, I just started thinking, well, you want to present as a pro. And so to me, how you present like that really matters. That I think is something where I know with state team applications, you know, like showing that you really want this because you've gone out of the way to dress appropriately, that's the first tick in the box. How someone perceives you, that's a foot in the door.
Yeah. Absolutely. And then on top of that, mate, like, how clear are you on your philosophies? I think that's really, really important. So if you do get a chance to sit in front of a panel, wherever it is, the club, the state, national team, like, how clear are you on your philosophies and how you value the game? And the most important thing is that you actually have a philosophy. Like, it's not whether it's right, wrong, or indifferent. Like, having a philosophy is the start. And then I think if we talk about our game, there's probably three or four different areas that you need to be really strict on in how you view it. Like, you got to have an offensive philosophy, how you want to score the ball, a defensive philosophy. You need a philosophy in personnel. Like, what kind of athlete do you want to coach, and how does that tie back into your offensive and defensive philosophies? On top of that, then my favorite philosophy would be a player development philosophy. Like, if you have not got a player development philosophy and you're coaching junior basketball or junior sport, how much value can you bring?
We've spoken about this before, about creating your philosophy and what does that look like, but some people as well, you know, like, make sure before you go into the interview you've actually spoken it and talked about it to someone else, because there is something different about writing it down and having it in your head versus being able to sell that to someone else. You know, I got caught out of that early days, you know, like, I thought, yeah, I can articulate this the way that I want. You get into the interview, there's a little bit of pressure, and now you're not making clarity on the things that you really do believe. So spending that extra time to just talk to someone else about, well, this is what I'm going to say, this is what I believe, and just let them bounce some stuff off you and find ways that what it would be like on an interview panel.
Absolutely. And you can record yourself and listen to it back, and most people are usually horrified, I find, at how they sound on tape. And we listen to the podcast back every week, and it's like, you've got to be kidding. This is how this thing sounds.
Yeah, Zeppel sounds really weird, doesn't it?
And sometimes more than others. But it is interesting to see how many times when you listen to yourself back, what are some key phrases that you constantly hit on? Do you constantly pause before you answer? Are you one of those are not sure? Do you stutter a little bit? Like, how can you make that better?
Why are you looking at Zepp, mate?
Not casting any dispersions on that, but it is really valuable to listen back. And what would you value in that as well? So if you were the interviewer, would you be happy with the answers that you're getting back as well? So your self-evaluation can be really good with that.
Yeah, and before you even get into the interview, mate, like, if we're going to be real about this, and I guess when you go into an interview, you kind of know what your chances are. Like, it's 50-50, like, I'm a chance to get it, I'm not a chance to get it, or you're applying for a job that's completely out of where you are at the moment. But ask yourself this, and there's nothing wrong with that. Like, I read a great piece during the week, like, apply for stuff you can't get. There's nothing wrong with that. What investment have you made in yourself in the past 12 months? Like, ask yourself that question as you're putting in your application for whatever the job or whatever the coaching role is. Like, ask yourself that, and then think about, if you get asked that in the interview, what has been your investment in the last 12 months? How do you articulate that? That says a lot to me, because this is an environment and if we're talking about high performance, this is an environment where you better be daily into figuring out how to bring the best out of yourselves and the people that you come in contact with every day. And if you can't honestly answer that, then the role you're applying for probably isn't going to be for you.
It's a great point. What about the VJBL level? So there's plenty of opportunities for coaches to get better throughout as well. So when they apply for their under 14 VC team, what are some of the things coach development wise they could have been putting into themselves over that 12 month period?
Mate, just wake up in the morning and instead of putting something on TV that has no value, just put a coaching clinic on. Like, they're so accessible now on YouTube, FIBA's channel, the Basketball Australia coach education, where there's so much stuff out there. Like, have your coffee over a 25 minute clinic on player development. And that stuff there banks up over time and it adds up, and then you start to become a master of something. And maybe you just become a really good footwork teaching coach. Well, that's something you can now hang your hat on. So when you get to an interview and you get asked a question, so what's your player development philosophy? I teach footwork. That's the first thing I do. You got to master the four pivots. And then you can start to articulate exactly how you feel about it. But I think to be able to get to that point where you sit in an interview or a round table like we are at the moment, for me to really believe that you can teach those four pivots better than anyone else, you've probably got to know it back to front.
Yep. And you've got to be passionate about it too. Unbelievable. And you'll pick that out straight away.
Mm.
Like, you can pick out the people, I think, that will sit there and tell you what you want to hear versus what they actually know. Yep. And there are certain people that will touch on a lot of things but with no substance. And that's the hardest part, is that whatever you believe, believe it wholeheartedly and have substance behind it. Don't just, oh, I really believe in footwork.
Yep.
Well, what about it? Like, what exactly do you believe in that?
The other thing is, don't have a robotic response to everything. So the coaches that we've seen kind of break down in an interview are the ones that you can tell have got, my offense is dot, 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 my defense is dot, dot, dot. Whereas when a question comes the other way, you need to be able to talk that out and go with it. And I find if you've come in with a real roadmap of this is what I'm going to say when, that's when you break down. Whereas, you know, have your parameters around what you want to sell. Got to hit those points throughout the interview, but the rest of it, make it a conversation. That's what coaching is, you know, like, be able to talk it through and have ways of really getting the point across in a coaching way.
So when you enter the interview, what are the sort of things you should be bringing with you? So some people will bring a written plan, some people will bring video. What are the sort of things that they should have in that if they're coming into an
interview? You've got to find that out beforehand anyway, I think, where you've got to make sure you ask, you know, do you want me to do a visual presentation? Am I just talking? You know, like, you've got to know that beforehand. And that amazes me how many times people don't ask us that. That's one of my first things is, well, how do you want me to present? I think in coaching interviews, a presentation always matters. So whether it's, you know, a PowerPoint, whether it's a visual, whatever it might be, just video in the background, you're talking to that. But that to me matters, because that's ultimately what you're going to be doing on a day-to-day basis with your team.
And we might talk about this in a little bit when we touch on resources. I might have this one for you, Robbie, but it would be pretty cool if you could explain your philosophy on one piece of paper. Like, if you could walk into the interview and say, and give each of the panel members an A4 piece of paper with your philosophy on it, which I've seen a few times, that'd be pretty cool as a conversation starter. And you can just say, hey, you'll see at the top of the page is X, Y, and Z.
A4 piece of paper, not A3?
You are overdue for your departure.
You will be missed. A couple of the other things I've always really valued in interviews and things like that, knowledge of the age group. Like, if you're going to apply for under 16, you better need, like, you have to know what is in that under 16 age group. If you're going to sit there and say, hey, this would be the 10 I'd be looking at, but you leave off the second best kid, why? Like, and if you've left them off simply because you don't know, that shows that you may not care about this as much as probably we need you to care about this. So you need to know what's coming through as well and what's around it. And what's the end goal? So with that age group, if you're applying for a 16-1 girls team, it might be very different to a 16-3 girls team. The 16-1 girls might have potential opals within that group. The 16-3s team might just be, hey, they're happy playing and they want to improve, but they don't really have aspirations long-term to represent in green and gold colours. So you do have to have a little bit of a plan on what is your season going to look like. Like, I love coaches that are able to come in and say, hey, here's my first phase when we pick our team. This is what our triad's going to look like. From triads, we're going to move into grading, and here's what we're going to emphasise through our grading. Once our grading's done, here's how we're going to map out the season. We're going to taper before finals so that they're not burnt out. You can sit there and say, hey, there's a really clear idea on what this coach is looking to get out of this season and how they're going to run it.
they've thought it through. What's our thoughts on what people should apply for? You know, like, how do we help coaches kind of figure out what is the level? Because there is an argument to say, as a coach, you always want to extend yourself. So do I find the level that is more challenging in club land that's going to ultimately help me up with that, the end goal that I've got for my personal goals? Or am I just going to master the level I'm at? I know I'm good at that level. Where do I go? Like, what are our thoughts around that?
It's interesting, mate. Very interesting. I would have no issue in hiring a coach of an under-12 VJBL team as a under-16 state team coach, under-18 state team coach, if they are a master teacher. If you can teach, that's totally different. If you can just coach under-12 boys, then you'll have a challenge coaching in different age groups. If you just master coaching under-12 boys, tough for you to coach other age groups. If you can teach and you're a master teacher, which means you can probably teach more than just basketball as well, I think that makes a bit of a difference. And I know I've heard it both ways where people have said, no, you got to be able to coach under-16 boys the year that you're coaching under-16 state teams. I'm a little bit different in how I view teaching and learning and the environment that gets created.
I know one of the years I was coaching a state team, I was also coaching under-12 boys. And it was actually a really bad thing for me because I wasn't really getting any game coaching on a Friday night. So yeah, by the time the tournament rolled around, I was rusty as anything at the start of that thing, because all I've been telling people is, hey, contain the ball and, you know, extra passing, and that's all I've really been talking about for 6 months.
That's a huge one for me with state coaches, is you have to be coaching your own team. So if you're going to get appointed to, you know, coach at a reasonable level, you have to be coaching your own team. So many people think, you know, being an assistant at a Seabull level is going to help them be an under-18 state coach. It definitely helps if you're pairing that up with the game reps yourself. That, in a standalone environment, I don't think sets you up for success. So that is a real important point you make there, is game coaching reps matter. Like, it absolutely matters more than anything.
And there's nothing wrong with, say, coaching under 14, 14. If you might have a family connection in there and you have to do it for whatever reason, there's nothing wrong with doing that. But also try and extend yourself and sit on the 18-1 bench, or do something else. And you might sit there and say, hey, I think I'm a really good under-14s coach, but I don't know if I'm any good at under-16s or 18s. Well, go find out. Like, go and get on court with those guys, be an assistant coach to another coach, pick up something from them, learn as much as you can, and see how you go interacting with athletes that are in under-18s. And if you can actually do it, like, I say it all the time, like, it's really easy to talk down to under-12 and under-14 athletes, because you're not going to get any pushback on ego or anything. But all of a sudden, you have to try and tell what is potentially the third best kid in the state, hey, you're not boxing out, or you're not getting the split help, or your rotations are slow defensively. And if you talk to them the same way you talked to an under-14 kid, you better be prepared for a little bit of venom back, because you're probably going to find it. So until you get like reps, as you say, coaching on court with those guys, you're not going to actually improve it. So I'd be really big on coaches looking to extend themselves.
What about gender then? So if I'm coaching the, you know, 16 boys, and I'm applying for the under-20 women, where do we feel and what do we feel about that?
I sit very similar to what I mentioned last. Like, I think there is crossover. Like, I think if you can teach under-16 boys, then you can teach under-20 women. I do think that there is a point where if you want to be a professional coach, or you want to go through the pathway, deep through the pathway, that you do have to narrow your focus somewhat at some point in time. That doesn't mean that for a campaign, Dom Lanossier can coach under-20 women without even thinking about it, because he can teach. So that's just how it works out for me, and the environment that gets created.
Yeah, I don't think it's too different. Like, you might need to adjust the language a little bit every now and again, and I don't mean swearing, just how you term things might be a little bit of a change. But as you say, teaching is teaching. Like, it's... I think we actually probably need to move away from the term coaching and actually go down the path of teaching a little more.
Pod will go out of business, don't we?
We can change this if we need to. But it really is more about teaching. You need to improve your athletes, and that's what you're really looking to instill in them, is a growth culture, in that I want to get better, and how are you going to instill good habits into them across the course?
I agree with both you gentlemen. I do feel there
30
is...
30 episodes in, we finally got one.
I do feel there is an element of stay in your lane, though, when you're going for a career path. So the feedback I give to a number of aspiring coaches is, if you want to be a coach that invests in the women's side of the game, there's nothing wrong with assisting on a program on the men's side, but you really need to be coaching girls full time. Like, that to me helps you ultimately get to your end game. Flip it the other way. Nothing wrong with crossing over. I 100% agree with that. But I think if you're trying to make a career path out of it, staying in your lane on one gender is, I think, more beneficial than changing lanes every single year.
Yep. And that's not to suggest that, and we'll do it at SCC this year, if we have somebody coaching the under 14 girls, that they'll help out and coach under 15 SCC boys. Yeah. Like, in the developmental piece, that's fine, but I do agree.
And I don't think there's anything wrong with making a lane change at some point in your career either. Like, I mean, we've seen so many successful people coach men early days and then cross over and coach women. Like,
Guy?
I think, Guy Malloy is a great example. Like, you can change lanes, but when you're constantly going back and forth, you're not ending up helping yourself master anything. And ultimately, if you're trying to make a career out of it, you know, kind of going with that, I think, does matter.
Like it, mate. Look forward to seeing you on a WNBL bench one day. My last thing, Robbie, and then you can push on after this, is be prepared for the question, who is your network and who are your confidants? Like, who do you call on to talk hoops? Who do you call on to talk advice or talk through game plans and strategies? Because I think that's really important. And you want to be surrounding yourself with people that position yourself to have a chance to land these jobs and roles at clubs and associations. So
keep having different people though as well. Like, it is dangerous to, you know, if your cohorts are all from the same club or program or whatnot, that's not going to help your mind expand on that front. Whereas if you can, you know, have one person from over here, one person from over there, someone that's interstate, whatever it might be, different sport, different trade, whatever it is, but have things where you can really get a real good clarity on multiple areas, so that you're not just singing the same song.
I agree with it. Like, some of the best career advice I got was from someone that has no concept of basketball whatsoever. I had to make a choice on what I was doing and went to them and they said, well, here's what I think and here's the reasons why. And it's like, this is a totally different perspective that I hadn't heard before. Yeah, it's thanks, okay, mate. I'm still coming to terms with you leaving. And emotional moment. You know, there's a fine line between disappointed and elation. You can choose which one I fall on. How do you go about working with or under someone that you may not necessarily have the same coaching philosophy as? So you might apply for a position with a director of coaching that says, hey, we're going to try and work our program this way, and you're applying for a job in their program.
Well, I assisted Justin one time, Robbie, and it will be the last. No.
That's not true. He was singing the song, mate. He was singing the song. I do, though, on that point, is, like, you've got to embrace the opportunity. Like, you, just because you may not 100% agree doesn't mean that you're not going to get value out of that, and one day that helps you form your own philosophy. Like, to me, as a coach, our greatest opportunity is working with other coaches. Like, that's one of the best parts of it. So having the opportunity to just get involved and may not be 100% what I agree with right now, but I'm going to do what's best for the athlete. And what's best for the athletes to follow that leadership, and then away we go. Just like Zep did a few years back.
Unbelievable experience, Robbie. We're still losing sleep over it, Robbie. That's a good point. That is a good point. You need to follow the philosophy to make sure that you actually stay in the job. Like, if you're going to interview for a Basketball Australia role and you tell them that you're anti-national style of play, your interview is going to be short and sweet. But how you use the parameters set by the director of coaching or the board or the committee or whoever it is, the state organization, to help your athletes and then help your coaching and help your staff grow. That's what you got to figure out. And that's good coaching and teaching.
Yeah, and the other part is, it's also an opportunity to add value where the value might not be there previously. So if it's only one message and one vision and one thought, now you're able to come in and say, well, you know, like, I've had experience with this. What are your thoughts here? If they say no, then that's okay. But sometimes it might be, yeah, no, actually, that's a really good point. Let's have a look at that. And then now you're adding to the program's value that maybe wasn't there before.
Absolutely. There's nothing wrong with disagreeing. Like, you're entitled to your own opinion, as is everyone. The big thing I'd probably suggest is listen to it, work out if it's good for the situation you're in at the moment, and then do what you do with it. You don't have to take on every bit of advice given to you. but you don't have to follow something you don't believe in either.
You applying for the under 16 girls job at X club is probably not the way to challenge the director of coaching philosophy that's being sent down. Like, don't make that your vehicle for trying to change the path of the club.
Great man once said to me, tell them what they want to hear in the interview and then afterwards you have the discussion. Like, and that great man might have been Zeppel, but no, I think there is something to that. Is it's not, you're not singing the song necessarily, but there is a right time and a wrong time, and what you need to do is stay true to your values. And what I would say is, if it's so far away from your philosophy, then why are you applying for that anyway?
Exactly.
Right. Exactly. So, you know, but where if it's something new and you're excited about, well, let's throw myself into something that's a little bit new, something that I could add some value to, great, like, go for those jobs. They're the ones that would excite me.
Absolutely. Yeah.
No question. All right. So based on this, everyone will be getting the jobs they apply for. State team applications will be short and sweet.
Can't complain to me anymore.
You can still get him.
There'll be a long list for the third chair of the pod, though. I can imagine, Robbie.
We can shortlist. That's okay. Don't
pry it off me.
So, on top of that, so we talked a little bit about professional development. So, one of the emails we had come in a couple of weeks ago was to talk about coaching resources. So, what are some of the things that you guys use to get yourselves better? What are some of the best things that you've seen around the place that have improved coaches as well? We're going to discuss a few different sort of areas on this. So we're going to talk about podcasts, books, and websites. We're going to sort of stick to that. Twitter, you can get a wide range of stuff on there. None of it from Michael Zeppel, but you can get a wide range of everything else on there. But we might kick off with you, actually, Mike. You're an avid reader. You just said you don't turn on the TV in the morning. You go straight to reading.
The only man with a lot of time on his hands.
No, mate. Man with just one job, not six or seven. That's what he is. We've kind of done this through the pods, but we've kind of just said, here's a book and here's a resource. So this would be good, Robbie. We'll put them all together and then people can kind of listen to the next 15 minutes and take what they need. I'll roll through a few books here, Robbie, that I've read, either have on the go now or I've read this year. And some of you boys might have read a couple of these. The first one for me, Robbie, I actually took it off Justin's desk about a month ago, and with him leaving, he probably won't get it back. It's called Basketball on Paper.
Yep.
Really good read. I'm about halfway through. It was written a little ways ago.
Fair while ago.
Yeah, probably early 2000s it was written. And it was one of the first pieces put together on basketball analytics.
Yeah.
And it is a really interesting read based on the NBA and WNBA. And it kind of lays the foundation of those terms that we use in the game now, like points per possession, number of possessions, effective field goal percentages, win streaks, like how to kind of judge how many games a team's going to win based on how many of their players carry on from year to year, turnover of a lot of lineups and things like that. So that's a really good read. I know you recommend that one too, huh, mate?
Yeah, absolutely. Like, it actually came from a conversation with the Statman. Some people out there will know him. Just about how I was trying to figure out where scoring spots on the floor were going to be more beneficial for us, and hadn't really thought or heard of analytics yet. And he said, oh, I reckon I got a book for you, and bang, gave it to me. And I read through it real quick, and it really did formulate probably what I did down in Tassie, where I went, the three-point line matters way more than anywhere else on this floor. And that's how I started my journey with what we've done over the last 12 years. And great book. A little old school now, like there's some stuff that you can probably find online as well, but to see it from that foundation point and read through is pretty good.
Yeah, no, I'm very much enjoying that one, mate. So that's the Hoops book for the listeners, Robbie. Number two here, I just finished it last month, called The Power of Habit, written by Charles Duhigg. And this is a bit of that human book for the readers, Robbie, for the listeners, Robbie.
Readers, yeah, he's done well there. Isn't he?
Yeah, he's on fire right now, jeez. The gel in his hair has gone to the brain.
Really good book. So talks about just how, as humans, we roll through this habitual way of living life. And it's interesting, they talk about a bunch of things. The end point might be a cigarette addiction or gambling, alcoholism, whatever it is, but the habit that eventually leads to that point is really, really interesting. Talks about things like, you know, if we think about basketball ourselves, like the habit of pointing your pistols when you're on split line, that's a habit. Closing out with a high hand, that's a habit. Contesting shots, that's a habit. So I read it to kind of see what I can draw from the habitual way we live our lives to, you know, how do you teach that in a basketball environment with 12, 13, 14-year-old kids. So really, really good book. Would recommend that one as well, Robbie. Number three, a bit of a culture book. Surely you might have read this one as well. It's called Legacy by James Kerr. So it's a few of the listeners might have read it. It's about the New Zealand All Blacks culture and kind of how maybe 20 years ago they were at a crossroads. They lost a couple of games, which was just like
a national
disaster. And from that point forward, they essentially changed what it meant to be an All Black, which was awesome.
I think the cool thing that comes out in it is just how that was then fed on from generation to generation. Like, it wasn't you were told this is how it is, you just became that. Like, really cool way that they went about.
And those that can't be bothered reading the book, and I'd strongly suggest you do, there's a one page notes you can put together on like what they stand for, like the Sweep the Sheds and all those sorts of things as well. So you can find that on Google, but I do recommend reading the whole book.
Number four, Rob, E-Myth Revisited. So that's a business book. Have you read E-Myth Revisited,
no.
Robbie?
No.
Not surprising. Yeah, I'm not even going to ask Shula.
We have lives, Justin. It's okay.
It's a business book. Really good book around... they kind of use a story to deliver the message through the book, but just about how you would build a business from the ground up. And I read it right when I started this role about 2 years ago. And I knew that I was kind of looking at a new product. I looked at high performance like a product, and how did I want to build high performance over time? And I kind of formulated a four-year plan from reading this book. But it is one of the greatest sellers of all time, The E-Myth Revisited, written by Michael Gerber. Highly recommend that one, Robbie, for you especially. Number five. A bit of a personal development book. It's called The One Thing. Gary Keller wrote that. Do you know who Gary Keller is, Robbie?
He's on my favourite book reading list.
Very good. Gary Keller is the gentleman who started Keller Williams Real Estate in the USA. Very successful entrepreneur. The One Thing, he essentially said, if you want to be very good at one thing, you actually have to work at one thing and dedicate a whole heap of time to one thing. So it's actually a really interesting read about himself and what he teaches and how he runs his organization. But he essentially said that if you want to be who you say you want to be, 4 hours a day is what you need to dedicate to being that person. So it's a really good read. Loved that book. And the last one, Robbie, I'll wrap this up or else I could go all day on these books, Robbie, is John Gordon gets a mention. You might have read this one. You Win in the Locker Room First. Heard of that one?
I have.
Very good book. I've read four or five of his books. All good reads. That essentially talks about setting that culture and the expectation of being a part of a particular club or team or organization. And he wrote that alongside an NFL head coach. And it's a really good read. And some really cool things out of there that I know a number of AFL teams have adopted and professional sporting teams have used in some pretty good seasons for them. So they're the six books that I could not recommend high enough, Robbie.
Excellent.
Well done, mate. Great book review.
Yeah, it's very impressive. You can just imagine him at primary school walking in every morning with his Alan business code.
Didn't make it.
No, it's a bit rough, isn't it? Big Book of Basketball. Oh. Phil Simmons.
I'll just wait for you guys to roll your lists off so I can critique it. I didn't read, like you say, in primary school book club. Like, I really did not start reading until I was like exiting college. So
that's a great endorsement for your college
once you
education.
Got educated.
Yeah,
you did come from Werribee, right?
Yeah, he sits there and says, "I have a major in journalism," and without reading a book, like this is an incredibly impressive one.
C's get degrees, baby.
All right, well, Justin, you've got the podcasts.
Yeah, so. I definitely didn't go in as much depth there as Zep did, but that was more because there's three I just want to talk about that aren't basketball specific, which I've always found, and you know, like in my job driving around, was a lot more podcasting than reading a book while traveling country Vic.
Audio books are a thing.
Audio books, I did try that, you know, just the voice.
Yeah, I struggled
really,
with
really
yeah, I
didn't
I can't,
like that.
I can't do it. Yeah.
But having said that, the last audio book I did read was off a recommendation by yourself. I can't remember the name of it though, but I was like, I'm not going to ever read this book unless I do this. But for me, the number one is Finding Mastery. And it's, a, I guess, about professionals in all fields. So it's not just sporting backgrounds. It's anything like CEOs, leading doctors, anything like who comes up. The guy who leads is actually the sports psychologist for Seattle Seahawks. Couldn't remember which city that was. And just has a great allotment of guests on there. Like some of the best ones I've listened to are definitely, you know, Luke Walden's the reason, the one that he did with him was the first time.
Shaka Smart's one was really good as well.
That was great. But some of the other ones I've really found value in is actually the CEOs and talking about how to generate leadership throughout, you know, companies and building culture and those sorts of things. So, you know, you can get stuck, I think, on basketball pods just non-stop. You know, to me, that's a great one of just finding something, you know, off the mainstream part. Another one that I like to tune into is TED Talks. You know, the TED Talks dailies, and, you know, often there'll be ones that I just zip through and skip. But every once in a while, just something a little bit more abstract about, you know, train of thought or what you're trying to do. You know, in different fields, I think, you know, is a great one. And the last one I'll throw out there is The Talent Equation, which actually Brad Davidson threw at me a while back and has really been great. It's targeted at teachers and coaches, really goes into, I guess, finite detail on how to work with athletes and students and how to really get them to lock in on certain areas of development or mind thought or those sorts of things. So, you know, three really different kind of angles on that, but all of them have added value to my coaching in one way or another.
I like that, mate. Talent Equation is a really good one. I listened to one a couple of weeks ago. The title is How to Coach the Technical Mechanics of the Basketball Shot Using a Constraints-Led Approach. Really good one. So July 4 that dropped. So if you do subscribe to that, download that one. It was a pretty good listen.
And I should say Michael Gervais is the sports site that for Finding Mastery. Yeah, I couldn't remember his name at the start.
Just remember that, or just look that up quickly.
After I looked it up quickly.
I love The Office.
The other good one is The Performance Fix, as well as is a great listen. It's only a new podcast. I think they're about 10 or 11 episodes in. But is another good listen as well.
The last one I'll throw in, you know, like the guy can get a little bit monotonizing or whatever the word
monotonous.
Is there. Monotonous, that's the word.
Oh, ending on a high.
Big high. The Coaching You pod with Brendan Searle. Everyone's his mate, and it does your head in after a while. But if you want to just hear coaches talk about, and basketball coaches talk about their journeys, their experiences, different challenges they've had. You know, I've used that a few times, just listened away and then thought of something going into a prep camp or something like that. So basketball specific, that's not a bad one there.
Excellent. I have the website's portion of this. So there are obviously a number. Obviously the BV page has a few clinics on there, which you can go and have a look.
Very
a few
good,
of which
Rob.
With Justin Schuller in.
A few of which I think I'm on there like four or five times.
Yeah, they're our least downloaded ones, I find. The BA coaches page, so coach.basketball.net.au has a range of resources in there as well, from skills matrices to videos to online courses, all those sorts of things as well. So I would absolutely recommend that. One of my daily visits, pickandpop.net, is a fantastic website. And again, not necessarily just about basketball. They have a lot of stuff from CEOs and business people on there as well. The football world is a great one that we take from a lot, which has got some great articles on there. But there is a whole heap of just breakdowns of film, teaching points, clinic notes on there. It's a fantastic website. I do highly recommend that every day. Hoopsdb.net has been probably one of the ones I would suggest everyone is dealing with at the moment, now that we're coming into finals time for Big V Siebel and all our other leagues around Australia. Duncan Berg, who's the assistant coach of the Nunawading Spectres Men, runs that site, a little bit of a passion project of his, but is a fantastic resource for those that want statistics, lineup data, trends, shot charts. It's I know for a little while there during the season it went down.
It's killing me.
Just everyone's scouting notes just turned south.
Oh, someone had to do some work.
Yeah, they actually had to do something.
Well, shit,
yeah.
Gee, sorry.
God forbid. But that is a great website. The Fast Model Sports website in general has a whole heap of stuff. So the Fast Trade on there. Amount of times I go looking for stuff on there and I'll see a play and I like, yeah, I kind of like half of it, but not the other half of it. And very rarely will I grab a play and say, that's what we're putting in with our group. It'll usually be a little bit of an action, which will combine with two other actions somewhere else. And before you know it, it's spiraled out of control. But I think that is a great website for coaches looking for drills as well as plays. There's a whole heap of stuff on there that they can
use. That's a great one at the start of a season as well, when either you're trying to figure out what actions you can throw in with the athletes you've got, but also you've gone, you know, year two with the same athletes. All right, what new drills can I throw out there and ones that I can turn in and put into the repertoire?
Yeah, definitely. Highly recommend for a lot of coaches. YouTube goes without saying. Well, it is the greatest coaching resource, I think, in the world. A couple of channels I do recommend. Zach Boysvert is a great one, and Half Court Hoops are both really good follows on YouTube, so you can find a range of stuff there. And one that's only just started up, one of the listeners of our program and one of our Vic Metro assistant coaches, Jack Fleming, has started his own website as well.
Sounds like royalties right there, is it?
Oh, there will be a check in the mail. Unfortunately, you will be out by the time it arrives. But Zeppel and I will have brand new Sonos and we'll be okay. So medium.com/@FlemingJack1995, and he'll put up a whole range of resources as well, which I would recommend everyone having a little bit of a look at. Just send that check to rob.colder@basketballvictoria.com. Potentially.
Oh, that makes me feel old.
It does. It we just look be. At you and feel old, so that's okay. So that's it for me for the websites. You guys got any others that you would recommend?
Cleaning the Glass. I think we've dropped that on here once or twice. Really cool resource for coaches out there. Articles and just some abstract ways of thinking. Ryan Pannone. Did you mention Ryan Pannone?
I didn't.
Ryan Pannone.
He's a Twitter follower.
He's a great
as a really as a yeah. You might get into Twitter follows in a minute, Robbie. But he does some great stuff in breaking down actions and plays. And I really like the stuff he puts out there.
Absolutely. So there are obviously a number of Twitter followers. Jay Shuler 15 is one. Rob Coulter is another. Zeppel, not so much. It's amazing how many people reference the fact that you don't tweet to me when I talk to him during the week as well. It is incredible. Ryan Pannone is a great one. Ryan Nguyen is another one who does some great stuff. Pete Lonigan usually has some stuff out there as well. At Lono610. Coach Dave Love, at Coach Dave Love, is a fantastic one. B-Ball Immersion is a great follower as well. There's a whole heap of people. Like, just go and look at who Justin follows, and that's usually a fairly good indication of if they're any good or not.
Yeah, basically any of those guys, you know, like you often click on something they've retweeted, and that's generally how I find the next one. But yeah, there's, as you said, there's so many different angles and avenues out there. It's not hard to expand the mind.
So that wraps up our resources. So into the week update. So this
new
is
segment.
New segment. We've got a weekend time update for Justin to leave again. A couple of things going on in the NBL world other than Justin signing. Southern Huskies. So there's a bit of noise down in Tasmania about...
Are they a team, Zeb?
They are. Their Facebook page is at Southern Huskies, Robbie and Justin. So interesting one out of there. They took out the back page of the Hobart Gazette or whatever the paper is down there this morning. You'll know what the paper is, mate. You spent some time down there.
I think it was the Mercury.
And took out the back page, and there is a little bit of a groundswell with this franchise, if we can call it that yet.
Yeah, no, I think it's exciting that there's another team being spoken about. I don't know, smack an AFL with 1,200 people liking it was necessary, what was needed. Like, basketball can definitely stand on its own feet, but, you know, just the groundswell in the NBL is something that's really exciting. And you know, we know there's another team already coming in next year. You know, the Huskies are doing the work to definitely leverage the league to let them in. So, you know, watch that space, I guess.
Absolutely. I think it'd be great. One of the other things going on at the moment is the basketball tournament. So over in the States, yep. It is huge. It's on ESPN at the moment, I think. Yeah,
absolutely.
Off the top of my head.
Some unbelievable athletes in there, phenomenal. Past, present, and future. Like, it's a great...
So the only rule is that you're not currently playing in the NBA, yeah, I'm fairly sure. So anyone else is available on your roster, so you can put together what you want. The really cool part I love about that is so many ex-college guys are grabbing... you know, old teammates and saying, hey, come in and play together, like the Ohio State guys put a team in, Syracuse have got a team in as well, there's a few other colleges throughout, but I kind of love that mentality of, hey, once you've been here, you're still part of our team, and you can go play in the tournament.
Melbourne United's Casper Ware got knocked out the other day, unfortunately, but they had a pretty good run again.
Melbourne United's Casper Ware?
I was just about to say, well, interesting. Well,
he won a championship last year with his
I wasn't sure if you were dropping that he is re-signed or not.
No, I can't say
breaking
that
news.
But definitely, Casper will always be a United boy.
Love that. So, Robbie, $2 million to the winner of the TBT. I guess the biggest talking point around this is the way that these games finish. Yeah. So, Dr. Nick Elam, who is a Mensa member. So, you know what Mensa is, Robbie?
I do.
Are
very
you a
smart
member?
People.
Robbie is a member of Mensa. I haven't seen you at a meeting yeah, lately,
I'll let
Robbie.
My lapse, unfortunately.
Is that the one that Homer Simpson was that trying was to get into?
We'll see you at the next meeting, Robbie. Anyway, so the ending of these games. So essentially the rule goes, first dead ball under 4 minutes. From that point there, the game clock shuts off. So the game clock doesn't exist. And then the team that's in front from that point forward, it's +7 on that score. And then it's the first team to that target score. And the way these games are finishing are really exciting.
Yeah. I mean, the other day there was a shot on the buzzer to... Well, the so-called buzzer shot to the score, you know, even ball game, 2 points was needed. It's different and it's kind of exciting. And, you know, often we've spoken about the length of an overtime, that it's 5 minutes and, you know, a quarter's 10. You know, different way to finish in a pretty exciting way, I think.
An interesting way that they came about this rule too, Robbie, was that, so... Dr. Nick, who's not friends with Dr. Grant, but we do speak.
Or even our Grant.
Is that he found...
He was on The Simpsons as well. He was. Dr. Nick.
He definitely was. He definitely was. Was that... So in his research, he said that, you know, deliberate fouling happens in about 50% of the basketball games that get played, but it only actually works 1.5% of the time, which is an interesting research project that he did. He supplied that to the TBT crew and they went through and tested it in some playing games and have rolled with it for this tournament, and it's a pretty exciting TV product.
I like it. I'm all about changing rules too, as we saw from the showcase. There's some modified rules in that as well, but I'm all about trying to make the game better. Yeah. Like, basketball is a fantastic sport, but if we can make it better and we can avoid situations where teams do foul late clock and then unsportsmanlike happen and those sorts of things, I like the idea.
Talk about rules. What's your thoughts about the AFL trialing rules during premiership season for competition points, and would that be something that we would favour in an NBL competition where there is betting and championship points and draft picks at stake?
I think the AFL just need to stop changing the game, but Essendon, it doesn't affect Essendon, so I don't care.
Extraordinary man.
I don't mind it purely because why not trial it? Like, if you can make the game better, like, AFL is becoming less appealing to watch for mine at the moment. Like, the game's just, it's not appealing for me at the moment. It's slow, it's bogged down, like, it's not a brand I like. So if they're looking to make it more exciting for the fan, I'm okay with it. If it doesn't have any impact on premiership points, no problem. They will probably need to do a little bit of work about how does it impact on draft picks. So it will probably impact ladder position, betting markets and all those sorts of things as well. But that's a problem for someone above my pay grade.
Maybe another Mensa member, Robbie.
Maybe another Mensa member.
Also,
what about a golden goal in overtime for basketball? Would that work, or is one shot too few?
Had a good conversation, interesting conversation. It was on the back of this TBT stuff with Mike Cassidy up at the COE, and we were kind of talking about, you know, what ways could you finish a basketball game. So tied ball game, 90-90, end of regulation. So it's Shula's team against Robbie's team. You got to supply 5 players in order, 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5. You supply 5 players in order, 1, 2, 3, 4, 4, and 5, and one-on-one. Like, 5 little games of one-on-one, basket, whoever wins, point, win. Like, there'd be some interesting things we can do at the showcase next year, Robbie.
You can deal with that one. No problems. It'd be nice if you were in the state for it. That'd be fantastic. Big congrats to the under-17 women. Absolutely. On their gold medal, Shannon Seabom and staff and team jagging the bronze at the under-17 Worlds. It's fantastic for them. Back-to-back medals for Shannon, which is fantastic.
Huge effort.
Again, girls did a fantastic job all the way throughout that. Like they put up with some pretty good talented teams to get that. So huge result.
Really good, Robbie. It was I caught a fair bit of it on the back end of the week, and I think it was just exciting for us to see so many Victorian girls in there. And you know, there were sometimes there was four girls from our state representing the country on the floor at the same time, and that's just really exciting for those girls, their families, but also those under 13, 14 and 15 girls coming through. They should see that as a viable thing for them in a couple of years' time.
Definitely, and Charlie Hill making All-Star 5, like that's no small feat. So, yeah, really good job. Congrats to all the staff and athletes. Like, really good to see them on the podium again.
It is. So next week is Justin's official last show. So we're going mailbag. So if you do have any questions, send them in over the course of the week. You can grab my email address on the BV website, shoot it through. Anything you want to ask Justin before he bails for greener pastures, feel free to send it through and we'll try and get to that as best we can. Excellent. That is it for us this week. Same as always, please do leave ratings and reviews on the show. You can download it through iTunes, Spotify, Audio Boom, or the BV website. We do appreciate it. Any feedback you want to send in, you can do so on email. Or if you want to keep the conversation going, you can do that on Twitter with the hashtag TalkingSplit. Thanks very much for listening, guys. We'll catch you guys next week.
Adios.